90 minutes before the hour. This is Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. Bob McCallum with the coach, Butch Carter. Later, Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and Gabby Bruce Boudreaux, head coach, Anaheim Ducks, on the program. Did you hear the story out of Queen's University? I'm going to turn your mic on there.
A little scary.
A little stupid, don't you think?
Yeah, it is.
What's wrong with people? They've been playing football there for 132 years. You buy a house near the stadium, and then you're surprised on a Saturday afternoon when it's noisy? Duh. It's like buying a house that backs onto the 401 and then saying, hey, cars are going by. What the hell?
Totally agree, Bob.
You know, these are people that need to be shot.
They need help. They need help.
We need to send them to Texas.
That'd be a good place for them.
Well, because they shoot people in Texas.
That's exactly.
That's how you get rid of people. Just send them to Texas.
I couldn't imagine someone taking the Cowboys to court for making noise.
So there's, yeah, no kidding, huh? Yeah, that'd go far. There's a noise dispute between Queen's University and a handful of its Kingston neighbors. And if Queen's is not granted an exemption from a noise bylaw that bans whistle and amplified noise, then it's possible that football would have to be shut down. Now, I can't even say that with a straight face. That can't it can't get that far, can it? Here's the head coach of the Queen's Golden Gales. Here's Pat Sheehan. Hello, Coach. How are you?
Hi, Bob and Butch. How are you?
Good.
We're
how
doing
are you,
great.
Coach?
Good.
If this wasn't so stupid, I'd be laughing. I am sort of half laughing, but how serious is this?
Well, it's you never really know how to what level these things go. It's an antiquated bylaw that unfortunately hasn't been challenged in 40 years. So you know most of the complaints at city council they don't become anything until somebody puts a face and a name on them. And
right.
Really, all that needs to be done is that the athletic grounds at Queens need to be granted the same privileges that the city parks have. I personally back onto a city park here. There's soccer and, activities for youth going on all day. There's whistles, there's lights, all that kind of stuff. My wife and I feel it's our civic duty to tolerate any perceived inconvenience, and there are very few. We happen to think that parks are where people are supposed to be playing and all the rest of it, so... I think that cooler heads will prevail. I think it's a few people who have managed to get their message front and center, and I think that the sleeping majority, if you will, Bob, just sort of never thought this would even be a serious issue. But now that it's been raised, I believe that support for Queen's Athletics and use of the athletic grounds will be maintained, and I believe that it's prudent that we show some sensitivity to the neighbors, so some adjustments will be made that that make it livable for everybody.
Well, you're being very diplomatic, Coach.
Extremely diplomatic, because if you actually get this pulled off, Coach, I'm going to bring you up here and have you talk to the owner of Porter Airlines to stop flying by our con.
Well, I appreciate some of your comments. Believe me, just not free to make them.
Well, I mean, you know, have you identified, has anybody identified the complainants here?
They have, but to be honest with you, by and large, Queens has existed in this community for the better part of 150 years.
Yeah.
The relationship hasn't been entirely seamless. As you know, when you're dealing with young people, there's the odd issue that comes up. But
really, yeah.
Athletics in this community is something that's appreciated by the vast majority of Kingstonians. They love the football team. They enjoy the athletics program. They enjoy the level of entertainment that the university brings to town, for the sports fan. So if I were a betting man, I would say that this is going to get worked out. But there's going to need to be a little bit of negotiating done to make it happen.
Are you planning on offering to lower the volume on the PA system?
Yeah, well...
Maybe.
Probably not. Probably best not to discuss details, other than to say that we're not going to be blaring music late at night. On behalf of our department, I'd like to assure you that I believe that we have probably here at Queens fallen well below, the new trend of making athletics events bigger, louder, And that's a plan to sort of appease, you know, the neighbors, not be overly disruptive. I think that we could, be louder and a little bit more intrusive, if we were to sort of take the full bore marketing approach. But I think we've been reasonable, but not everybody's a football fan, Bob.
Coach, how many votes do you need?
Well, I think it comes down to the city council, and I think there's 13. I think there's 13 votes, and you have to get a majority. I think that everybody in Kingston realizes how important the university is to the town, to the economy. They also realize how important student life is. I don't think that necessarily a minority of people with an axe to grind are going to win the day, but. They're definitely being heard.
Well, they should be heard, but I mean, being reasonable. You guys have been playing football there how many years?
132.
132.
That's right. A long time.
So
I'm guessing nobody has owned their house in the neighborhood for more than that length of time. In other words, they haven't been putting up with it for 132 years and finally said, "That's enough. I can't take any more."
Well, it's the first complaint in 40 years.
Well,
I think that's why it caught everybody off guard.
I'd love to know if it's somebody that just moved in, if you buy a house on backs onto the freeway and you profess to be surprised because there's car noise there, that's why you got the house there. That's why it was priced like that.
One of the things are you considering changing your game times?
Well, you know what? We've stayed away, Butch, from Friday night football because in the event that the game spills over beyond midnight, and you get the lights on, you got cheering, you got cars, you got traffic. So we think that Friday night football would be a big seller here in this community, but we've stayed away from it because we just think that the aspects of the the intrusion into the neighborhood might be a little bit unwelcome by some. So. Somebody wrote in a great analogy today. They bought a house near Fort Henry, and if you buy a house near Fort Henry, okay, with the cannons going off and the changing of the guard on Wednesday night, you hear the noise, but you're not going to phone your city councilor and ask them to stop all the activity because there's a little bit of noise you have to put up with. So I think cooler heads will prevail. This seems to have got itself on the radar. I'm sure there are a lot of other things happening in sport that you guys would rather be talking about.
No, not necessarily. Yeah, this is fun. We like this.
It is fun.
Well, I saw the story last week, and I said, we got to do it. I mean, we shouldn't let this go because even though we suspect that saner heads will prevail here, Coach, you never know. And what you wouldn't want to do is just ignore the story. And then all hell breaks loose and the dopes at City Hall decide to uphold the bylaw. And then you guys are sitting there going, well, now what do we do?
Yeah, I mean, all they really need to do is give us the same privileges that the city parks have in Kingston, which doesn't seem to be, too big a stretch. And the other thing I want to reiterate that we're talking about a small group of people here. The vast majority of Kingston is 100% behind our football program. So it's I would be really surprised, if anything significant happened to hurt our operation. But I will say this, that our athletic department has reached out. They've tried to, find what places they can to make some adjustments to accommodate the people. So it's we are listening, and we realize we have to coexist with the people in our neighborhood, but we aren't going anywhere.
God bless. Pat, good of you to take time for us today, and next time we'll talk football instead of noise.
Great talking to you. Go Blue Jays.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
Take care.
Pat Sheehan, head coach, Queens Golden Gaels football team. Like to hunt these people down.
They just need to be heard and move on. And just hopefully their city councilors.
But we've all lived in neighborhoods with
absolutely.
With people like this.
Correct. I mean.
They don't like kids. They don't like dogs. They don't like anything. They don't, they just don't like.
That's correct. So it's sad, and but I agree with you. You need to do the story so that it doesn't, in case it does get out of hand. I mean, he needs some support.
Well. Yeah. I mean, well, we have people that listen and watch in Kingston, lots of them.
I mean, he needs support, and they need to come
out. Well,
you
need to stand up. I'm not saying that they shouldn't do something. I don't know whether the noise is, like, ridiculous.
Right.
If it means cranking down the PA a little bit, or if it means, making sure the band plays upwind instead of downwind. I don't know. I mean, if there's little things you can do, then sure, you should do them. Because that's only reasonable. You want to get along with everybody. But in terms of shutting the program down because of the noise restriction, that's craziness, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Oh, there's the music. Almost scared the hell out of me when it came in there out of nowhere. It's almost like a gunshot. I thought somebody from Kingston's made their way into the studio here. If you don't like the football games and you don't like the noise, move! Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, Bruce Boudreau, head coach of the Anaheim Ducks, when Butch and I come back and Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network. Hour 2 of 3. Prime time for this Monday, the 14th of July, 2014. Coming up this hour, Jonah Carey will join us. Have we separated the pretenders and the contenders in Major League Baseball at the All-Star break? I don't think so. I mean, there's a few crappy teams that have no chance, but not many that we didn't think wouldn't be there. That's the dilemma you get. It's one of the downsides, I suppose, of this expanded playoff thing, which I'm in favor of, is you're going to start eliminating a lot of these July 31st or August 31st trades, especially the July 31st ones, because there's just not going to be that many sellers out there. But we'll talk about that. How do you change the All-Star game? I know how to change it. Hand grenade. Pat Sheehan, the head coach of the Queens Golden Gales, will just tell you their story. What a mess that is. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and Bruce Boudreau, head coach of the Anaheim Ducks later on. Here's the coach. Here's Butch Carter. How you doing?
Good, Robert. How are you, man?
You got the McCowan sunglasses on today.
Yeah, I'm honoring, 26 years for you.
So is that what you're doing?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. So, I thought it was...
Took him a year to get around to doing the 25th anniversary. They're like a year late on the 25th anniversary.
When you're making a great wine, you got to take your time.
I know, but that's wine. This is broadcasting. Like, I'm not that young anymore. I could have expired. I could have kicked off between the 25th and the documentary. Well, then what? Then it would have been in memoriam.
Yeah, but me and the kids are rooting for you to keep going. So,
all right, I'm me too. The doc airs, what, Wednesday? 7:30. On what channel? All the channels? Every channel? Some channels? 1-360? East Ontario, Pacific, and West. All the ones that count, right? Not the one we're on right now. They'll be carrying some crappy programming. So Wednesday at 7:30 if you want to watch. I got nothing in it. If 5 people watch or 5 million people watch, I make the same amount. Nothing. So, do what you want to do. I'm just trying to promote stuff. So, we got a lot to talk about. Level of surprise with LeBron going back to Cleveland on a scale of 1 to 10. Zero?
3 or 4?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's a transitional, mature decision. You know, when you start talking about...
You have to respect him for it, don't you?
Right. You know, when you start saying the wife's pregnant, how do I want to raise the boys? I just think it gets to be real simple. At the stages boys are, they're asking good questions. He's got to give them good answers. And they said being in Miami was great. But it actually makes me think that even if they'd have won another championship.
He'd have done the same thing.
He'd done the same thing.
Yeah, I think so too.
Right.
more surprised that Bosch stays.
But there are a couple things. Bosch has had a very ugly custody fight. And, you know, when you're in those things, you got to go to court and get approval to move around.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat Riley doesn't have, I don't know how many years, you know, he wants to stay in the seat. But I think he felt that they can get back and compete with free agents in the future if they have a foundation. If they went to zero, it'd be a lot longer building process and clearly not in the plans for Wade.
He also gave Bosch max dollars.
Yeah, it was the money part. I mean, Chris Bosch, LeBron's got to be his best friend for life because he just got $195 million being associated with the King.
Mm-hmm. That ain't bad.
Not bad.
And Chris Bosch, a very good player and
yeah,
deserving of a substantial salary, but not that kind of money.
Not that kind of money, I mean.
And Houston offered him a max deal, but Miami could offer him even more to keep him.
And both of them are no-tax states. He can stay where he's at, doesn't have to worry about dealing with going back to a judge just so he can see his daughter.
Right.
So I think all those things are important. And the other 10 toes in his household probably said, you know, let's stay.
What do you think Miami does to try and fill the void?
I think they play through this year and then try to figure it out next summer. I think that's all they can do. I think they need to establish a certain level of credibility that they haven't gone totally in the tank. And the most important thing in my mind was that Spoelstra has shown that he's a very good manager. Now we get to see if he's a good coach.
What happens with Wade?
I think they sign him for 5 years and he gets, you know, fit between $50 and $60 million and it's the swan song.
So they give him tenure, they give him a long-term deal.
Yeah, long-term deal.
But at reduced annual dollars, which gives them space
correct
in the future to do some
correct
things.
I would imagine all the guys that they're signing them with those guys allocating for flexibility in the future.
What do you think LeBron needs in Cleveland to make them a legitimate contender?
They need a conditioning coach for one, because
yeah,
historically, while he's not been there, they've not had the mentality to over-condition so that they don't miss games. They have been a team that has not paid attention to that, not understood the importance of it, because it's okay if guys are making mistakes in games if they're in the games. But it's a bigger mistake, and I've seen a lot of teams do this where not only are guys injured, but they're not required to work out or be at practice, and it's just chaos. History has shown that the great teams, you start with, Parcells was the first to do it, where he had the mandatory summer workouts.
Mm-hmm.
All the OTAs were put in because of Bill Parcells. Parcells was ahead of the game, over-conditioned guys, docked them from not being there. And, you know, football can be pretty brutal for the average guy anyway because his contract isn't guaranteed. And so I believe you must have a culture of conditioning. I think it's the most important culture to have. If you have that, where guys are available to play in games and you can make good decisions.
Do you think they move any one of the young players, Cleveland, in order to try and get a little bit more experience?
I think everyone is going to ask them if their young players are available. I think every single who has if there's a deal to be made, they are not going to allow Cleveland to only deal with one team. There are going to be other people call and say, well, you know, by the way, if you're offering Wiggins, especially the way I watched Wiggins play last night in the summer league, there's going to be an abundance of teams offering veteran players for him.
Didn't Cleveland contemplate some?
Yes. There was a deal made. Clearly, you know, everybody said, well, LeBron's going back to Cleveland. They got kind of stuck there. And then they followed up, well, it's a two-year deal with the early exit, right? So there still is a certain amount of distrust, I believe, but across from the table. And so there's, you know, I'm coming, now you got to prove that you're going to do what you said you would do. So, you know, what did he promise he was going to do? And clearly in his letter in Sports Illustrated, he did not mention the young Wiggins.
What do you make of that?
That potentially if they're going to add pieces to win sooner, then...
Well, they got to win now for LeBron. They can't, you know, and let's be honest, there are very few guys that walk into the NBA at age 19 and are impactful. As good as Andrew Wiggins is, it takes time. And we've seen it repeatedly here. Vince wasn't a star in year one. Tracy didn't really start to even come close to his potential until his third year in Toronto.
Yes.
And there's all kinds of stories. I mean, every once in a while, a guy comes in out of the blue and
Magic
and,
Johnson.
Yeah, and can play right away. But that's, we're talking 35 years ago that that's happened.
Correct.
That's not even worth referencing.
Correct.
And I don't know that Andrew Wiggins is or isn't that guy. I thought there were moments last year at Kansas where he was really just ordinary. And I think he's got a chance to be a great player. But I don't see him being ready for stardom this year. Do you?
Yes.
You do?
Yes. Young Wiggins is a cross between Vince and Tracy.
Well, okay.
Vince I could hide because I could, on the really good offensive guards, I could put Doug Christie on. And it took Vince about 25 games to figure out that his offense could be so good some nights that his defense could be really mediocre. He was a mediocre defensive player.
Right.
Tracy McGrady was so physically fragile that I had to basically milk feed him until I could grow his minutes. But he became a dominant defender. When Tracy McGrady left, he was the best defensive player on the team.
So you think Wiggins' real strength is defense?
He can guard. He can guard threes. He can guard twos. He can guard backup ones. And the beauty of the team he's going to, LeBron can say, hey, I'll take him tonight. So he can sit over there. But he's an awesome transition player, and he's shooting the basketball very well from what I've seen in a couple summer league games.
But you can't get this, I don't think, the same price. You can't extract the same price for either of the other two young Canadians in Cleveland that you can for Wiggins.
You're absolutely correct, Robert. There's absolutely correct. You can't. It won't even come close.
So you may be forced to move Wiggins.
Yeah, the problem is you're going to be forced to, because actually the more I think Wiggins plays with LeBron, if LeBron does what older guys did for him for the young guy, then his value is only going to go up. As the season goes along, as training camp goes along,
right,
you're going to see if they get through training camp, then there'll be 25 teams or 20 teams with scouts at the exhibition game. And the exchange of talent is going to grow and grow and grow. And, I mean, the biggest problem you have is how do you fit it into the cap, because the veteran players are probably going to be at a lot larger number, and Wiggins' numbers, I think, is going to be between
four
and
five. So if you're Cleveland and you're going to move Wiggins, and we're hypothesizing
yes.
here, give me a couple, three names of guys that LeBron/Cleveland need in order to elevate themselves into the discussion for potential championship.
Well, in my mind, if I was Oklahoma City, I would offer Westbrook for Kyrie Irving and Wiggins. All right. That was one that I'd looked at earlier on, you know, who would you do and why. And Westbrook because you get the point guard that Durant needs. You get another young player to go with Durant that's better than the young guys they've got who have failed in the Harden trade. So I would look, that's where I would look. That's the player that would change things around, give LeBron the star that he needs, not just some guy who shows up and is injured and does some stupid stuff off the floor.
So you need a guy to run the offense and get him the ball.
Yes, I mean, you need someone.
And Kyrie, you don't think Kyrie Irving, and I tend to agree, Kyrie Irving doesn't seem to be that guy or want to be that guy.
We're talking about a guy who's gotten an extension, played six games in college, hurt. You know, he's never made a team achievement. And, you know, I just think Westbrook would be a better fit in Cleveland with LeBron. Star, true defenders, right? And then you'll get all kind of other guys wanting to come. So you also could relieve them. I don't think that Oklahoma City is really enamored with their power forward. It's time for him to move on because they have the young kid from Pittsburgh. But that's the kind of transaction that I'd be looking for. I'm not going to be looking for an if and a maybe. I'd be trying to get one star and a very good starter who has played significantly in, you know, in playoff basketball.
Is there anybody else that comes to mind?
No, I'm not a Kevin Love fan. As I'm on record, I'm not a, a fan of Kevin Love. Yes, he can shoot the basketball, but he, if you look at their team stats, they're in, worst in their league in defensive field goal percentage. He really can't guard. You're going to need a defensive center. Defensive centers are tremendously hard to acquire. I'm just not a fan of Kevin Love. I think in the East, you have to be good on the perimeter and be able to lock folks down. You talk, you know, Washington, John Wall, Indiana, Chicago, you know, a lot of really good perimeter players. You don't have to be awesome at the four and five spot. You know, out West, that's a problem with those guys. But I think if you're trying to make sure LeBron stays on a two-year deal, I would trust Westbrook more than I would Kyrie Irving.
Does the does Oklahoma City's action, is it mitigated by Durant's future?
Yes, it is. There's no question.
So in order for them to move a Westbrook or to even contemplate bringing somebody in,
they'd have to get his consent.
Do they have to get an extension?
Well, I think he's up in 15, maybe next summer, the summer after, and everybody's waiting for him. New York thinks they're waiting for him.
Mm-hmm.
Washington has got to have in mind that they're waiting for him, but I think that...
he grew up a Raptor fan, by the way, too.
I'm really glad he grew up a Raptor fan, but the reality is he's going to need to be in the conversation. And I think what's going on now is that the players are playing, are talking to their ownership or their leadership and not showing all their cards.
Right. So if you were still the coach of the Toronto Raptors, and we understand how sold you are on Andrew Wiggins, is there a deal out there for the Raptors to get Wiggins? Would you even contemplate it at this point?
Well, I mean, I would think if you know Wiggins is going to get traded, I'd pull my car in the parking lot and wave my hand. I mean, it's
We think that's at least a possibility right now, not a probability.
That's at least a possibility. And
so you've got to be in that conversation, right?
I feel you have to be in that conversation. I basically feel Andrew Wiggins is going to do what LeBron did. He's coming home. Whenever he gets a chance to come home, he's coming home.
What makes sense from the Toronto Raptors standpoint?
Well, remember, you got to match the salaries. It's not just talent. So, you know, in fairness to all your listeners, Wiggins, you know, they probably want another wing player, which would be DeMar. They probably want your all-star player, correct? And they probably would ask for Valasciunas. So, you know, that's probably where they would go. And, you know, the two
players. That price is too high, isn't it?
That price is too high, right?
As much as you like Wiggins, that price is too high.
That price is too high because, you know.
Would you give up one of the two?
Absolutely.
Would you give up DeMar?
Yes, yesterday.
Valanciunas, less likely, because there's no replacement there.
Correct. You're going to end up being a donut, and they have not gone out and found a backup.
That's right.
Center, and they haven't had one since.
They haven't got one that can even play a little bit.
That's correct. They did, you know, when they let Stuart Gray go out west, he was a reliable backup professional center that they could have used last year.
Yeah. But you got to give up something to get something.
Every time.
Yeah. All right. Put your headset on there, and we'll continue this dialogue a little bit later on. Fascinating stuff. Later, Pat Sheehan will join us, the head coach of Queens Golden Gaels football. A noise dispute between the stadium, between the university and residents around the stadium has placed the upcoming season in jeopardy. It's an unbelievably stupid story. But we're going to address it a little bit later on in the program. The All-Star break is on in Major League Baseball, and Jonah Carey of Grantland joins us to talk a little bit about it. Hello, Mr. Carey. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Is there anything left in the All-Star game that you find compelling?
No. And if you go to Grantland today, there's an article where all of us went around and kind of talked about the whole staff, basically, all the baseball writers, weighed in on what they think about the All-Star game. I dropped F-bombs. I went after Bud Selig. I got really angry, and I said, I don't want to talk about the All-Star game. I hate the All-Star game. Go to hell with the All-Star game. I do not like it. The All-Star game to me is 4 days off of baseball. That's very bad. It reminds me of the 94 All-Star game when all the Expos made it, and then it reminds me of the Expos leaving. That's very bad. It reminds me of Sealy being checklist in 2002, creating the situation whereby this game counts, which is really stupid because it's an exhibition game. It's managed and played like an exhibition game, yet it's made to count. There is not one thing that I like about the All-Star game. Get rid of it. Burn it to the ground.
All right. Absent burning it to the ground, which seems highly unlikely, although I don't disagree with you, I am consistently asked, as recently as the last hour, what would you do to change and fix the All-Star game? And I have only one answer, which is the same answer I've given for all the other sports All-Star games, and that is take a whack of dough, say $20 million, put it in a clear paper, a clear plastic bag, and dangle it from center field like a piñata, and at the end of the game, the winning team gets the money.
I'm pretty sure.
Go ahead.
I think wrestling has an event like that. I haven't followed wrestling too closely in a while, but I think it's
well,
money
know.
In the bank event.
Yeah.
And I think it's literally what you said. It's like a suitcase full of money that they suspend over the ring, and if you get it, then you win.
Yeah.
I like this idea because it's so over the top and so WWF specifically that it appeals to me. So I'm with you. Let's go with your solution. I like
well,
it.
But and the reason I say this is because, and look, the reason we don't like All-Star games, quite frankly, is because they're not real. The NBA All-Star Game isn't a real basketball game. There's no defense played. It's a joke.
No.
The NHL All-Star Game is equally laughable. So the Pro Bowl should have been hand-grenaded years ago. No one would play in the Pro Bowl if they could get out of it. And the Major League Baseball game All-Star Game is equally bad. Now, I can remember as a kid, I can remember Ray Fosse getting run over by Pete Rose. I can remember at least some players actually played the All-Star Game with pride and it was, I thought it was a real game. But you can't bring those days back. The only thing that will lure players into playing hard and playing for real is do-re-mi. And a whack of it might do it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, and the thing about making the game count that it's for home field advantage, that's the worst of both worlds. You're kind
of get rid of
taking
that.
You're taking a mild attempt to make it count, and what's ending up happening is you're influencing an event that has nothing to do with the All-Star game and nothing to do with 99% of the players. You know, the Rockies guys aren't going to the World Series. So I think that's silly. If you incentivize the individual players as opposed to the generic American League versus National League, at least I can get behind that a little bit.
If you had, again, $20 million in the bag, there's 30 players, let's say, on a roster. I don't even know exactly how many there are, but around that. So yeah. We're talking almost $700,000 a guy. I mean, Kershaw would get up for the game if there's $700,000 on the line. Who wouldn't?
The manager would, too. The manager has been, you know, the way the manager manages is he says, okay, we're going to use every guy in the lineup. We're going to make sure that every pitcher doesn't go more than an inning. No,
yeah, to hell with that.
For real.
Yeah, to hell with that.
For real. You would make frequent pitching changes, but it would be to play every platoon, to make every matchup perfect. You'd have pinch hitters. You'd have strategy. There'd be a bunch of things going on, for sure.
All right, so feel free to steal that idea.
I like it.
Yeah, it is a good idea. And they probably could come up with the cash. I'm sure somewhere.
You know what you could do? You could literally make it a self-generating thing. Whatever revenue the All-Star Game generates between ticket sales and you know, merchandise or whatever that doesn't go to, or doesn't go directly to the city of the host city, you know, because obviously MLB gets a cut too. Just take that money and literally it becomes a self-generating enterprise.
All right. So we've solved that problem. Do you have any other problems?
Done.
Coach?
No, I think the All-Star Games as a whole, all of them, their demise correlates directly to the self-promotion of individual players.
Well, sure, because they're not getting paid for it. It's like an exhibition game. You know, guys don't try. The only guys that try in exhibition games are guys that haven't made the team who are trying to make the team and trying to impress. Guys that have already got a job, they don't care about that stuff anymore.
But when the advertising all certain around, they created all these events for, like, tonight Home Run Derby, you know, so they sold it. And everything that they could sell, all right, was all about something individual so they could put a sponsor's name on it.
Right.
And it went right to the heart of, you know, this has nothing to do with a team, all right? It's all based off of everyone being selfish. And in baseball directly, I think it's one of the biggest failures of the commissioner.
Well, the trade deadline looms on August the 31st, so teams will have about 15 games, give or take, after the break, before the deadline. One of the dilemmas of adding wild card teams is that it brings more teams into the conversation. teams are less likely to sit there on July 31st and say, well, we're dead. We're not going anywhere. We might as well sell something. Are we going to have, are we in a cycle now where fewer and fewer July 31st deals are going to be made?
Well, yeah. I mean, the last couple of years have shown that there are fewer deals. Let's put it this way. I don't know about fewer in whole volume, but I can definitively say, because I've looked at it, fewer impact trades. You really don't see too many blockbusters anymore. That's why when a Samardzija Hamill kind of thing happens. And by the way, Samardzija and Hamill, go over to, you know, the mall, go over to the promenade in Thornhill and ask people if they've heard of Jeff Samardzija and Jason Hamill. I guarantee you most of them will say no, they haven't. They're not household names. They're pretty good players. And that's maybe the best trade that we're going to have. And I think that there's a bunch of reasons for that. I think part of it is this whole idea of the wild cards, but there are other things too. Like, for instance, free agency isn't as good as it used to be anymore, because what's happening is teams are locking guys up. And I don't even mean just the Yankees and the Dodgers. Evan Longoria is locked up. Joey Votto is locked up. Felix Hernandez is locked up. Guys who play for mid-market teams or even small-market teams are getting Ryan Braun, getting $100 million or more to stay. So if there's not much money out on free agency and you've got a pretty good player, unless he's literally about to hit free agency, there's no impetus to trade the guy necessarily. It's not necessarily something that you're going to go ahead and do. So taking the Rays, for example, you know, the Rays could say, oh, well, we want to get rid of David Price or whatever because we're not going to keep him. Yeah, but if they're going to be competitive next year, they can't go out and sign somebody like David Price. Maybe they roll the dice and they say, 2014 is not happening, but let's go into 15 and see what happens and trade him in next year's deadline, accepting we're going to get fewer lesser in prospects. Or they could say David Price is going to make $20 million next year, so therefore that might be harder to trade him. There are a million reasons why this is happening. And, yeah, I think that you're right that it's a lack of sellers, because it's not that they're – but I also don't think that there are more buyers necessarily, because what's happening is the teams that are in the middle will do neither. You'll see a lot of teams that are two games under 500. They won't sell, but they're not going to make a big trade either. They're just going to say, let's see what happens, and they'll finish 82 and 80, and their fans will yawn and nothing will get done. Those are the teams that I think are being hurt the most, the ones in the middle. And, you know, I have to tell you that the Jays are kind of close to being at that territory. If the AL East was a little bit stronger, I would say the Jays are exactly one of those middle teams that are the most screwed right now.
Well, especially with the lengthy list of injuries that have been cropping up over the last few weeks. I mean, I said for some time, I mean, you know, as much as a Shields or a Price is appealing to any team, I'm not sure that's the greatest need of the Toronto Blue Jays. Right now it's like lukewarm bodies. You know, they don't, I mean, it's half their lineup should be in Buffalo and was in Buffalo. Anyway, let's not dwell on that too much.
Yeah.
What will it take to get Price out of Tampa? And who's the most likely, who do you think is the most likely buyer?
So rather than give my opinion, I could tell you what people in front offices who have considered David Price have said, because I talked to probably about 10 people over the last couple of weeks about this. And one of them that I trust the most said this, and I touched on it briefly in the last point, but I'll just kind of emphasize. Price is making the prorated $14 million this year, and the next year he's going to make 20 or more in arbitration. Now, David Price, by whatever measure you want to use, if you want to use wins above replacement, if you want to use David Price is really good, whatever, by an objective measure in a vacuum, is obviously worth way more than $20 million a year. He is one of the 10 best pitchers on earth. Those commodities are very hard to find. He's probably worth 30, maybe 40. So, by all logic, every team should be in on somebody like that. But in reality, the Pittsburgh Pirates are not necessarily going to give up four great prospects for the prospect of paying this guy $26, $27 million for a year and a half when they might not win either year. They're just not going to do it. Well, now that I've said that, maybe it'll happen. But it's unlikely that it will happen. And you start to eliminate teams that, whatever you want to say, don't have the means or maybe, frankly, don't have the ball. I think the Pirates could do it, but it would require spending to a place that would be a little bit uncomfortable, and they don't want to be uncomfortable. They want to make profits. So if that's the case, you start to eliminate, okay, no Pirates, no this, no that. And now you're down to, is it going to be the Yankees? Well, the Yankees are so decimated by injuries that even if they got David Price, they wouldn't necessarily win anything. Furthermore, they're in the same division. Rays might not want to do that. Okay, what about the Red Sox? Well, they're in an even worse situation record-wise, and they're in the same division. That doesn't make a lot of sense. All right, what's another big team? Well, the Dodgers. That might be it. I mean, it might be the Dodgers, and maybe you make a case for the Cardinals and the Braves, although the Braves always spend like a mid-market team, yeah. And the Cardinals don't tend to give up Oscar Tavares types in trade. So now you're literally down to the Dodgers. Now, the Dodgers are run by a general manager who is so aggressive and so unconcerned about the future that maybe he gives up three elite prospects and that trade gets done. But if he's smart, he could sort of sit there and say, wait a minute, I'm bidding against myself
there's no other team that's going to go after David Price. So he'll say, here's my offer. I'll give you this. And if that happens, then the Rays are kind of hosed in a way. So they have the commodity that should be very valuable. But based on what I'm hearing in the industry, and it could change over the next couple of weeks, teams could get more desperate. But right now what they're saying is, you know what? I'm not feeling it.
The common belief is that the Rays are only interested in prospects. Do you think that's true?
That is a very broad term, prospects. If you could get a guy who has less than 2 years of service time in the majors, that also has value. It's not the reason that this fetish for prospects exists or whatever.
They want controllability, right?
Yeah, it's just controllability. That's it.
Yeah.
And it's just salaries get expensive and whatever. Again, I think the Rays are another team that probably goes a little too far with holding the line. But then again, you know, they kept Carl Crawford right up until free agency. They did not trade him when they were in the race and they knew that he was going to be free agent. They said, let's go for it. They did not trade B.J. Upton either. They went with those guys. They did trade Shields. They did trade Garza. But it's not automatic. This is not like the old Montreal Expos where literally everybody's going to get fire sailed off as soon as they get to 4 years of service time. The Rays are going to think about it strategically. And if they're not going to get what they want for Price, then they're not going to trade them. They'll wait until this winter when there could be more buyers, when it could be, you know, the trade deadline is chaotic, right, Bob? I mean, it's just there's so many things going on. You go to winter meetings, you're sitting there in a hotel suite with your, you know, cocktail weenies and your glass of whatever it is, and you can relax and you can have 20 teams come up to your suite and work it out and whatever. And the Rays are good at that. They've done that a bunch of times. And I think we might be looking at that right now. It is possible that Price goes nowhere by the trade deadline and we revisit this in September.
Butch?
I'm hoping St. Louis.
Could be.
Well, I'm sure they'd be interested. I don't know. What's their depth like? Do they have kids?
Lots, huh? Harris is one of the five best prospects in baseball.
Right.
Carlos Martinez is great. They have a guy named Grichuk who's an outfielder is good. They have two other guys at lower levels. And their pitching staff is in trouble. Michael Wacha's hurt and Jaime Garcia's out for the year. It would be a perfect fit. It's just a question of whether the GM can stomach giving up one or two elite prospects, truly like super elite prospects. Guys are ready to help now for a guy like Price.
And Price wants $30 million plus on his new deal, right? That's the word.
Yeah.
He wants Kershaw plus dollars.
And I don't think he's going to get it because he's old. A, he's older than Kershaw. B, he's maybe, you know, half notch below him. But I think he can get 25. I can get like a 60 or $150 million deal, something like that.
Perfect for the Cardinals.
Yeah, maybe. That's not a bad idea. We got to get out of here. Mr. Carey, always a pleasure. Enjoy the All-Star game. Float my idea.
Done. In a suitcase. WWE style, brought to you by Bob and Karen.
All right, that'd be good. You just bring, well, like the World Series of Poker, maybe you bring it out in suitcases and put it on a table in behind
right
home plate.
And everybody has to fight for it.
Yeah. See you soon.
Take care.
Jonah Carey of Grantland. It's a mess at Queen's University. Is their football program in any jeopardy because neighbors think it's too noisy in the stadium? We'll talk to the head coach about it when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. The Fan. On demand.